Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month med plus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Moali.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sexology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nazanin Moali. And today we're diving into a topic that sparks curiosity, excitement, and sometimes a lot of shame: kink. What actually is kink from a psychological perspective? How do specific kinks develop in the first place? Are they learned, wired into us, connected to attachment patterns or early erotic imprinting? We're going beyond the usual conversations about spanking and dominance to explore the psychology behind less commonly discussed kinks and what even unusual fantasies can teach us about how desire works. We'll talk about the emotional safety that needs to be negotiated before acting on a kink, how to move past shame around sexual curiosity, or even around not having a kink, and what to do when your partner shares a desire that doesn't immediately turn you on. I'm joined today by Gigi Angle, a registered psychotherapist, sex educator, and award-winning author of All the Fucking Mistakes and the upcoming book, King Curious. She specializes in working with gender, sexuality, and relationship diverse clients, including members of the LGBTQIA+ community, kinky folks, and people in polyamorous and open relationships. Before we dive in, I want to talk about something incredibly common that doesn't get enough attention: premature ejaculation. About 1 in 3 men experience it at some point. And here's what's important. PE is subjective. It simply means ejaculating sooner than you want and feeling some distress about it. For one person, that might be 30 seconds. For another person, might be 10 minutes, but wishing it were longer. Control and confidence matter. That's why we partnered with Steady Freddy. And I want to be transparent. Whenever we get a new sponsor, I personally test the product. When we tried Steady Freddy, it genuinely made sex significantly longer while still being pleasurable for everyone involved. The balance is key. It's a delay spray designed to help men last longer while keeping sensation intact. And interestingly, many women purchase it for their partner. It's truly a gift for both of you. You can get 15% off with the code SEXOLOGY at steadyfreddy.com/sexology. And of course, please make sure you're always reading the label and follow direction for use. All right, let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Sexology Podcast. I am so excited to welcome back Gigi Engel. Gigi is a relationship psychotherapist, sex educator, author. She's been on the show before, and we are having her back on the show because she just published this wonderful book about kink. Gigi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, thank you so much for all the great work that you're doing. I know you do a lot on writing about sexual health, normalizing taboo topics around sex, and recent book, which I know as we're recording, it's going to get launched in a few weeks. It's about kink. And what I've noticed, and I'm sure this has been your experience as well, that kink entered more of a mainstream conversations recently. So for our listeners, first of all, they might not know what kink is, which I highly doubt. Can you tell us a little bit about what do we mean exactly when we say kink?
When we're talking about kink, I think that people misunderstand it quite a lot. They'll kind of move immediately into the whole 50 Shades of Grey, Red Room of Pain kind of like BDSM world. But actually, kink is much more highly complex than that. It is a big umbrella term that encompasses a lot of different sexual practices, where BDSM is certainly a part of it, but it's not necessarily the whole thing. It's basically anything that falls outside of the heteronormative umbrella. And so it's kind of a huge topic. Like, even when we look at something like sensation play, like where somebody maybe is blindfolded and their partner is like giving them a sensual massage, that kind of thing, that is considered kink. So I think a lot of people are much more kinky than they probably realize.
And it's interesting that, as you said, like people have this misconception about extreme, what they consider extreme behaviors, which in reality, many things people do in foreplay is falls under kinky behaviors. Sometimes people confuse between kink and fetish. What is the difference between those two?
Sure. So when we're talking about kink and fetish, by definition, all fetishes are kinks because kink is the big umbrella term. A fetish, basically, let's start with kink. So a kink is a non-normative sexual interest. So that's basically anything that falls outside of the heteronormative umbrella. That could be spanking, it could be balloons, it could be wax play, it could be bondage. It could really be all these different things. And when we're talking about a fetish, we're talking about something that is a typically non-sexual item or act that a person needs in order to have their peak erotic experience. With a kink, it's more like that's something you really enjoy and you like it to be a part of sexual experiences, but you don't need it. Whereas a fetish is kind of like a more intense kink where you kind of need that object or act to be a part of your erotic experiences in order to have your peak sexual experience. Now, fetishes also fall on a bit of a continuum. Some people may have a fetish where if that object, let's say leather gloves, if like leather gloves are not a part of their erotic experience, they may not even be able to experience arousal at all. Whereas other people may really want the leather gloves to be a part of their erotic experience, but they don't necessarily need it in order to have a good time.
And it's really helpful to know that, as you mentioned, there is a spectrum, because sometimes when people who are considered quote unquote vanilla, they have this fear that, oh, if my partner has this fetish or kink, it needs to be looking a certain way, which might be. But as I'm hearing, there is a lot of flexibility for my clients, for people who are interested in different kinks and fetishes. And one of the number one questions I get when it comes to kinks is people are curious how people develop these kinks from the beginning. Some people think about it being part of an attachment. Some people think it's about imprinting. What have been some of the findings that you discovered around the origin of these behaviors?
So when it comes to, is kink born from fantasy? Is it connected to attachment? Is it connected to erotic imprinting? Basically, it's yes to all of the above. Because desire is so multi-layered, some kinks may come just from fantasy alone. Others may be shaped by attachment patterns, intimacy wounds, or some of the power dynamics that you grew up around, etc. Basically, it's about your early erotic imprinting absolutely playing a role, because it's like the first time that you felt in your body an arousal experience from whatever that kink may be. And that can certainly happen when we are first growing up, but also people may develop kinks through experience, through fantasy, et cetera, in their later adult life. So really, it's a huge spectrum of how kinks may develop. And I think what's important is that people are often very curious and very interested in learning why their kinks develop. But I often say that why the kinks develop is an interesting thing to know about yourself if you're coming at it with curiosity. But really, it's not so much about why, but rather, what does this kink do for you emotionally, sensually, and relationally now in your current life?
I love that you brought that up. I like it as a thought experiment, right? I'm often curious about why this type of person arouses me, for example. I'm just coming from the place of curiosity. But sometimes when people want to know exactly what was the origin of this kink, sometimes it comes from this place of, I don't want it. I don't fix it. The same way if we have a tumor, right? Like, where was the origin of it? I can remove it. But when we're coming from the place of curiosity, it creates space for us to kind of understand our desires more and co-create this exciting sexual experiences. Because what makes an erotic experience exciting for many people is that creation phase. So, and I think when you have kinks and interests, it can be a secret sauce. And I know for majority of people, as you mentioned, they people are going to engage in spanking, as you said, BDSM. These are the very common things we see in media. People often might have had experiences with partners in the past. And there are some uncommon ones that we don't hear much about. I know that you have done writing on balloon play, on war. Can you tell us a little bit about those uncommon ones? And what are these teach us when we're kind of like thinking about it from a psychological lens?
Yeah. So psychologically, when we think about kink, it's much more of like a sensory experience rather than being particularly literal. I think we can think of a lot of kink play as metaphorical. So when we're talking about something, let's say balloon play, it can speak to anticipation, the thrill of unpredictability. When is that balloon going to pop, et cetera? Or it could be like a soothing ritual sensation of the blowing up of the balloon, of the caressing the balloon, smelling the balloon, whatever it is. So it's like a full body sensory experience. And when we're talking about something like vor, which is the kink of wanting to be consumed or eaten or fully enveloped by usually a fantasy creature, we're talking about surrender. We're talking about the total acceptance. We're talking about the feeling of being enveloped. So we're kind of looking at kink in this sort of big sensory way. And I think we have to understand that a lot of eroticism is very symbolic like that. So it's subconscious desires that are speaking through metaphor in our kink play. And you don't necessarily have to relate to someone's kink or understand all of the emotionality that's behind it, the excitement, the comfort, submission, all of that. But it's about the vulnerability of being seen and understood by a partner as well.
And many of these things develop very early, at least for many of my clients. I've watched so many cartoons of people showing that, oh, this is how I discovered I was into being enveloped. Or like people sometimes they develop it early on. And I love that you frame it in a sensory experience because that's more relatable for people. Because sometimes we have this negative messaging about, okay, if someone is kinky or like less with the newer generation, but I know with my generation, there was this misconception around that. And if we're thinking about another form of sensory play and symbolic play, I think that creates more openness around open to experiment with it if you're interested in or getting even curious around it. One of the things I love about the book you wrote, this kind of step-by-step guideline for people to kind of have these conversations. Whatever we're doing, emotional safety is very, very important. And specifically around any kind of kink play, any kind of like power exchange, that's also very important to have these conversations. So for people who are curious about it and they want to have these conversation, what would you recommend them to consider and negotiate around emotional safety?
Absolutely. I mean, emotional safety is foundational in being able to talk about our desires in general. But when it comes to kink, it can be very extra vulnerable. So we need trust, we need transparency, and we need a shared understanding of boundaries. And emotional safety really means we can talk openly about what we want without fear of ridicule and shame. We need to know the difference between fantasy and real world limits because some kinks and fetishes are just not doable in real life or aspects of them are not. Vor is a good example of this because if we're talking about a monster basically, you know, eating you or whatever, it's like that's not really going to be able to be realized IRL, but there are ways to negotiate around that. We also have to have, very crucially, we need to have safe words and check-ins. When I say safe words, these are non-sexual words that are designed to stop the play when somebody is reaching either a boundary or a limit or something's making them feel uneasy so that you can check in with your partner. So you need to be constantly checking in. A lot of kink is negotiation. And then we need to also understand that consent is a living and ongoing conversation. So it's not like you go in and you've just said yes to a certain thing, but we are understanding that at any time consent can be revoked or renegotiated throughout play. Because when emotional safety is really clear, our kink play can become really expansive rather than being overwhelming. And it stops being taboo and it starts to be a collaborative process.
For many people, they haven't had experiences, certain experiences, and they want to engage in it. It's really hard for them to know their maybes, right? Like, you know, maybe like what looks like a no, but like the maybe part, it's can be difficult. How can people navigate it when they're curious, but they're not sure around that gray area?
I think when it's a gray area, we need to come at it. And I talk about this a lot in the book, but it's called an enthusiastic maybe. And a lot of playing with kink, especially if you're new to it, is that you can go in with certain boundaries. Most people understand things that are a no. They understand things that they're interested in. But if you've never done this before, a lot of what you're working with is a maybe. So as much as I want to say consent is an enthusiastic yes, sometimes you don't know what your boundaries are until you're actually playing with certain stuff. So like if you are, let's say, you're doing a little bondage scene and you're tied up, and this was something you were interested in trying, but you weren't sure, but you thought you were going to be into it. But then suddenly you start to feel uncomfortable. That is an opportunity to check in and renegotiate how you're feeling about a certain thing. And I think we have to have grounding exercises with our partner. There's plenty in the book. Finding a way to come back to ourselves, get grounded again, and renegotiate those boundaries without thinking that we're bad at kink, we're not good at sex, whatever it is, because sometimes we need to be gentle with ourselves because we don't know what we don't like a lot of the time until we're actually giving it a go. It's the same thing with all sex.
I love that. And I think I love the idea of enthusiastic maybe, because I think many times, unless we are stepping into maybe, of course, if we feel comfortable, we wouldn't know. Right. Like, and I think it's going to be for majority of people, not an exciting, adventurous experience if you're just staying at your yes. At least that's not the case for me. For the renegotiation piece, do you recommend people to do it in middle, or is that something that they do in aftercare? What would be some of the good places to do that?
Sure. So because you have your safe words, if there's something that isn't working for you, I would recommend using your safe word in order to stop the scene where it is. And then coming together, because you're new to kink, I wouldn't recommend just using a safe word and then just going back into a scene or doing something else. I would recommend you move into your aftercare plan. And I have a lot of making your aftercare plans in the book, because aftercare looks very different for everybody. Aftercare is basically just the stuff we do to reconnect, to ground ourselves after emotionally intense experiences, which kink is. So if you reach a limit or you're like, that was not something I liked, you say your safe word, and your partner is giving you the generous interpretation of meeting you with empathy, you move into your aftercare plan. And that's an opportunity for you two to reconnect, to have a discussion, to figure out what it was that was uncomfortable for you and how things can be adjusted in the future. Because sex and erotic experiences and kink are so emotionally intense that sometimes we need to take that time to really process and ground and feel safe again in order to effectively communicate.
Many people who are, like, for example, if you are with a partner that they are new to kink and finally they agree to do something, when the partner you say for it, the other partner might feel get disappointed, the shame might show up. How do you recommend people to manage shame around these experiences?
Sure. So shame is really inherited rather than something that we own, essentially. It's not really a truth. It comes from all of this puritanical messaging that we have all experienced in some way or another, no matter which culture you came from, honestly. So we need to be understanding of safe words when we're having our first negotiations, that like if somebody is saying a safe word, it is not an indictment on somebody's ability to do that specific kink act. It's simply a way to alert a partner that a boundary has been reached. And I think when we can come to each other with that kind of empathy, it really makes it a lot easier not to get onto the defensive side. We need to start normalizing curiosity over shame, just to get into how we can move past shame. Because everybody has some sort of erotic wiring. Some people just have a much clearer sense of this. And those are the people who are perhaps more proudly kinky than those who are kind of moving on to this journey at the very beginning. So you don't need a kink to be interesting. It does not make you deviant to have one. I think we need to approach desire and kink in general and all sexual interests with more neutrality, rather than thinking we have to be like so gung-ho for it or so anti-change me kind of vibe in order to allow shame to have no space to breathe, because we're approaching things with curiosity rather than shame.
And I know for many people, you might kind of be this sex positive person, or you might be neutral to certain experiences, but also you might not be into certain things, right? We all have things that are we're interested in. There are things that are neutral and there are things that doesn't do exciting. It's not exciting for us. So if our partner asks us to do something and just doesn't turn us on, how can we approach it with integrity, with empathy? Because that is can be a very tough conversation to have.
Absolutely. I think that what we need to do is be able to graciously accept a no. We have to understand, and we say this in the kink community, but it's just don't yuck other people's yum. So that might be something that you're not interested in, but that doesn't give you the right to treat another person poorly. And I think we need to come to our partners when they're being willing to be so vulnerable and honor the vulnerability of that disclosure and not, but while also not pretending that we're into something that we're not. So I wrote an example for your listeners. So I would say, this is a little script you can say. So you can say, thank you for trusting me with that. I love that you shared it. I'm not sure it's something I'm into, but I want to understand it better and see where we can meet in the middle. And that way you are creating a space where the doors of communication are kept open. And then you can figure out ways where perhaps this kind of play can be a part of their erotic life, can be a part of their solo erotic life, or perhaps it could be explored in a different way if you're really not interested in it. Or perhaps it could be a way that could be incorporated into your erotic experience on occasion, depending on your boundaries. And you can also do exercises once you've had these kind of conversations, which I have in the book called a yes, no, maybe list, which lists all of the sexual and kinky things that I could personally think of, which are, it's very extensive. It's not exhaustive, but it was everything I could think of. And you guys can go through it separately, figure out what your yes, no's, what those maybes might be, things you might not have thought of, but you're interested in. And then you can come back together and find some overlap. So that way you can explore together in ways where you both find it exciting rather than partners making concessions where they really might not want to do something, because that's also not fair.
I love that. I love this kind of invitation and this kind of like the curiosity place, and also recognizing that I see you, I hear you, you're valid, and I might not be into this. And there are other options in the menu that we can explore. I think that is just such a beautiful way of putting it. So our listeners, they have permission to use your language if they want to kind of like practice that. And what I like about kink, sometimes I talk about it's erotic language. So people who are interested to build fluency in this realm without feeling rushed, without feeling pressured, what are some of the invitations you have for them?
So there are so many ways to really start to get comfortable with it. I think before I get into the lists I have here, my book really focuses on the individual rather than partnered play. The last third of the book is where we get into bringing our partners into the experience, because I think so much of kink is actually about that personal journey, about discovering what your wants are, what your desires are, what this actually would look like to you. And I think that's so foundational. So I think that's where we really start, is you need to figure out what you want. Because I think of a lot of the time, there's nothing wrong with experimenting with kink with a partner, but I do think it is a good idea to figure out what it is you actually want as an individual before you start doing partner stuff, because that way you'll be a lot more clear about your desires. And that's really step number one, is starting to name what those desires actually are. That doesn't require any action. It's just figuring out the language of like what it is that you actually want. Is it that you are really interested in spanking? Is it that you actually want to be spanked? Is it that you want to be spanked in a certain way or in a certain context? And kind of figuring some of that stuff out first. And then when we're bringing our partners in, that's a really good opportunity to start sharing our actual fantasies. And they can often evoke emotionality, but that's where we have those sort of conversations that are a two-way street. We're inviting our partner to share their fantasies. We're sharing our fantasies with them. We're giving generous interpretation and empathy in order to defend against defensiveness. And then when we're moving into actually playing with this kind of stuff, you can try really low-stake experiments with kink. For instance, you can try a blindfold. You don't even need to buy a blindfold. You can literally use a t-shirt or like a scarf. And you could try a gentle power dynamic, because I think a lot of people, this is a kind of an easy door into kink. I think people very much think it's this dom sub thing that they very much have to do. When actually, when we look at any real sexual experience, a lot of the time, there is one person who is kind of doing the leading and one person who is doing the following. And that's not unlike kink. This is just more explicit. So I think you can figure out some of that stuff if you start playing with power dynamics more explicitly. And then when you're finished with sort of experimenting with some of this stuff, that's an opportunity to have your debrief, which is your aftercare, figuring out what was awkward, figuring out what was great, figuring out what you want done differently, what you want more of. And you can expand gradually from there into different kinds of play. But I think what's a really important thing that I just want to leave everyone with is that this is going to be awkward and it is going to be funny and it is going to be silly at times. And we are not going to be able to fully embrace our kinky selves and really experience what we want if we cannot get over the fact that like some of this stuff is going to be growing pains, because you don't go into the kitchen and you've never cracked an egg before and suddenly you can make an omelet. You need to be able to practice and figure it out together.
I agree with you. And I think kind of learning things together can also feel connecting, right? Like you're leaning into these new skills and that also can bring an element of excitement and even flow if it's not overwhelming. Gigi, I know your book is such a great wealth of knowledge when it comes to kink. And what I like about your writing is very clear and helpful for people that are trying to navigate things. So for people that are curious about your book, about your services, tell us a little bit about how can they get a hold of you.
Sure. So you can find everything about me on my website, which is missgigiangle.com. I also have a Substack called The G-Spot, where every Monday I fill your inbox with kinky things, sex things, relationship things from a therapist's perspective. So it's pretty heavy on the psychological aspects of sexuality. So I think it's really fun. And I am on all the social media at Gigi Angle. And you can find my book, Kink Curious, wherever books are sold. And it will be released January 21st. So if you are hearing this after January 21st, get out there and get yourself a copy.
And I highly recommend it. I love talking about, I was sharing with you that I talked about in other podcasts already, which is got released and people were so interested. So I hope people make sure that they're getting the book. And thank you so much for Gigi for coming on the show and can't wait to have you in our future episodes.
Thanks so much for having me. This was so fun.
As we wrap up, here's something worth remembering. The range of human desire is far wider than most people realize. The fantasies people quietly hold are often far more common than they think. Curiosity isn't a problem, shame is. And when we bring honesty and emotional safety into the conversation, desires become something we can explore rather than hide from. And before you go, a quick word about Steady Freddy. We genuinely enjoyed using it. It helped sex last significantly longer while still feeling good for everyone involved, which honestly is the balance that matters most. If control and confidence are something you're working on, this can be a simple, practical solution. You can get 15% off with the code sexology at steadyfreddy.com/sexology. And of course, always read the labels and follow directions for use. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Sexology Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.